Tom Woods Show, episode 892.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. Don't settle for audio that's less than professional. Hire Chris Williams Audio for all your podcasting, music production, and film audio needs. I use Chris for The Tom Woods Show. Couldn't live without him. Check out ChrisWilliamsAudio.com, and at checkout, enter Woods for 10% off your first contract. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. With tensions on the rise with North Korea, Michael Malis is back on the show to help us understand what's going on and what the future is likely to hold. Michael, as you know, is a celebrity ghostwriter and a highly successful one, I might add. He is the author of Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il, a book you will very much want to read, particularly these days. I'm linking to it at tomwoods.com/892. You can catch Michael frequently on Kennedy on the Fox Business Network and all over the place talking about North Korea. This week alone, he was on with Tucker Carlson, Neil Cavuto, and others. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
I've had people for a long time saying, when are you going to get Malis back on to talk about North Korea? Well, today is their lucky day. You are indeed back to talk about North Korea. Let's say a little something before we do about a little announcement you have pertaining to your book on this subject that I just told people about.
Dear Reader is now, you all been asking me, because apparently a lot of libertarians and freedom lovers and conservatives are illiterate. But yes, the book is finally out on audio. I did not do the narration because I do not think my voice would be appropriate. I am extremely pleased with the audiobook. It's very true to how I wrote it. And that's the other thing that's really kind of creepy, is when you write a book in the first person, you're kind of hearing the character in your head. So to hear it come out of my speakers, much as I had written it, was a very bizarre experience, I got to say. So yeah. I'm very pleased. Go to Audible, get it if you haven't got, and it's more pertinent than ever. So the part of the reason I wrote the book, as you know, was so people could be informed by North Korea, because other than me, no one in the press seems to know what they're talking about, because it's hard to do your homework on the subject, to be fair. And it's very complicated, very idiosyncratic. It's not the same as Russia. It's not the same as Cuba. It's not the same as Syria or some of these other places, or Iran. It's its own unique animal. So I set out this book, wrote this book, so someone can read it and really have an understanding of how they think and how they operate. Because when you're talking about North Korea, it's like you're talking to Martians who are traveling in time, right? So not only is it alien thinking, it's also kind of anachronistic in many ways. So it's very hard to understand and empathize with their point of view, which is not to justify it, but you have to know your enemy if you're going to expect to see what they're going to do next.
Sure. So I urge people, check out this book, and particularly the audiobook version. As Michael says, you can get it on Audible. And in particular, Audible has a deal. If you're not yet a member, you get your first audiobook with them for free. And if you decide that you don't want to continue with Audible, they let you keep the audiobook for free. And even if you get the free audiobook, Michael still gets his royalty. So you don't have to feel guilty about it at all. And in fact,
you scared me for a second there.
Yeah, that's right. No, you are still getting your, believe me, I know, because I've been pushing people to get one of my books on audiobook, because I still get the royalty.
Okay.
But then the Tom Woods Show gets a commission if you use tomwoodsaudio.com to grab Dear Reader. So we're all going to be, you're going to have a free book. I'm going to get a commission. Michael's going to be happy. We're all going to be happy, right? It's just fantastic. Even Audible will be somewhat happy.
Although I promise after you're done reading Dear Reader, you won't be happy, because North Korea is so much worse than people realize.
That is true. That's the one aspect of it that you won't be happy about. But check it out at tomwoodsaudio.com. Let's talk about current events. Super, super current, like right here in the news.
Yes.
Up to now, you know, what we know is that the North Korean regime is characterized by, you know, wild statements and over-the-top statements, and generally the U.S. seems to have dealt with these things as diplomatically as possible, not to the point of opening relations and having talks, but, well, they understand. I mean, in other words, we haven't seen anything quite like what Trump has done.
Right.
And I want to know what you feel about this change. It's clearly a change in American policy to be that confrontational with North Korea.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a change in American policy in and of itself. It's a change in Chinese policy, because the big issue with North Korea is North Korea and South Korea are divided by the DMZ, the ironically titled Demilitarized Zone, which is actually the most militarized border on Earth, complete with landmines, tunnels, and all sorts of other things. However, the border between North Korea and China, the Tumen River, is very easy to cross. And China doesn't want 24 million people who have never seen it, who've never seen a computer, who don't speak Chinese, crossing that river and setting up camp in Manchuria. So for years, they've been the ones who, you know, people think that China likes having North Korea there. And in one sense, they like having a buffer between, you know, China and South Korea to be, you know, as an anti-American thing. But they are trying to have prestige on the world stage. They're trying to be a rival superpower to the States. They don't need to be defending this kind of provocations and almost barbaric behavior and boorish behavior. So very clearly, when the Chinese president met with President Trump in Mar-a-Lago, this was the big issue on the table, and they must have had some very frank discussions. And I'm sure that's part of the reason why Trump went back on his pledge to brand them a currency manipulator. This might have been a tit for tat, because they're clearly working together to finally resolve this issue. Thank God.
All right. So how do you feel about this then? You're in favor of the Trump posture?
I'm in favor of freeing the North Korean people. I mean, these are 24 million hostages. They've been hostages for 7 years. It's been getting worse and worse over the decades. I mean, the horror stories fill my book and they continue. Thankfully, there's less and less faith in the government by the North Korean citizenry as they find out more about the outside world. And China was the last holdout, as I said, for earlier reasons. So it's not the Trump posturing is nothing new. I mean, President Bush put them on the axis of evil because he didn't want to have three Muslim countries on that axis. He just grabbed them at random.
But yeah, OK, but that's why. Not because he was really paying them much heed, right?
Well, he was paying them much heed in the sense that he had read this book called The Aquarians of Pyongyang, which was the first Western expose of the concentration camp system on a large scale. And he read it. It really shook him. And frankly, anyone who reads this book is going to be shaken by what it's like in these concentration camps, to be fair. However, the idea that they're somehow in cahoots or analogous to Iran or Iraq is nonsense. I mean, they do have relations with them in the sense of, like, we both hate America. But this is discussed in their propaganda in my book, the idea that it's an axis, which is like a mathematical, you know, line, comparing three things, is nonsensical.
The stakes are pretty high here, though. I mean, nobody denies that it must be a horrifying nightmare to live in North Korea and live in these terrible conditions and live under that regime.
Right.
But the stakes are extraordinarily high. I mean, we're hearing things like nuclear war could break out at any moment. This is not a small thing. This is so nothing short of brinksmanship could be the solution.
Well, this is what's kind of scary to me in the press, where they're like, oh, can North Korea hit the U.S.? Can North Korea hit the U.S.? North Korea can easily hit Seoul, the capital of South Korea, which has 10 million people. Now, granted, you know, if you want to be a complete sociopath, you'd say I'd rather hit Seoul than, you know, Los Angeles. Fine, that's technically true. The idea that we want a mushroom cloud and 10 million bodies is, you know, that's a nightmare scenario, a nonsensical scenario, and they absolutely have that capability right now, and they've had it for years. So the problem is, if you look, first of all, as you know, people in the anarchist school point out all the time, when these regimes give up their nuclear weapons programs, just like in Libya, the leaders themselves get personally killed. It's the last thing that, and it was the United States that introduced nuclear weapons to the Korean Peninsula in the 50s. We took them out in the 90s. So they have a point when they say, you guys started this, and this is us, you know, in defense. However, now that they have them, I don't know what it would take to get them to give them up, because Kim Jong-un would probably be shot, and with good reason. These people should all be shot. I don't know if crimes against humanity is something that's a good legal term. It's kind of like the victor's justice, but these are murderers and monsters who starve children for political purposes.
What does South Korean opinion say about the current situation? Do they think Trump is over the top or what?
Well, South Korea has decreasingly been interested in North Korea. It's a very sad situation. So when North Korean refugees make their way to South Korea, and since you can't cross the DMZ, they have to go through China, make sure they're not caught in China because then they're repatriated. So they either go China to Mongolia and Mongolia to Seoul, or China to, you know, and they go through the Southeast Asian countries. And everyone from North Korea who steps foot in South Korea or a South Korean embassy, which is considered South Korean soil, automatically becomes a citizen. But once they're there, their accent is regarded as, the word I heard used was guttural. And I asked the refugee, I'm like, what would be the American equivalent of a North Korean accent? And they said, someone from the very deep South. Now, you know how city slickers treat people from the deep South. They hear them talk and they're contemptuous and dismissive completely unfairly. So South Korea has, I don't know if it's currently the case, but as of very recently, was the suicide capital of the world per capita, the plastic surgery capital of the world per capita. It's an extremely competitive society. And you have these people who have no education, who have nothing, who are short, and who have this kind of backwards upbringing from the perspective of the South, and they're trying to make it there, and it's extremely hard for them. So every time you overturn a rock looking at the North Korean situation, it's just more and more headache and misery.
All right, let me ask you about a couple things that have happened recently where we feel like maybe behind the headlines there's a little bit more going on. For example, there was the U.S. strike in Syria. You talked about that on Kennedy. You were absolutely great. We don't have to talk about it here.
Well, you can link to that in the show notes page.
I could if you remind me. I certainly will. Sure. Michael was absolutely top-notch on this, as always. Did you see I linked to it on my social media, Facebook and Twitter? I put that video up.
Well, did you see you and Matt Welch both did? And I
that's right on Twitter. That's right.
I'm the big tent of liberty. I'm bringing all the factions together.
It was a glorious moment. And then, of course, the so-called mother of all bombs dropped in Afghanistan.
Right.
So some people have suggested this was meant as a show of force, really, for North Korea more than anything else. That's one thing. The second thing is we had this missile launch failure in North Korea.
Right.
And behind that headline, some people are saying maybe the U.S. somehow sabotaged that. In either or both of these cases, do you think that the headline should just be taken at face value, or is there really all this other stuff going on?
There's no question that President Trump knows a lot more about North Korea than the public knows. And frankly, that's how it should be, because North Korea is watching the news just as much as us. The other theory that hasn't been broadly promulgated, but which I'm partial to, is let's suppose you're North Korea and America's saying, if you have this test, we're going in. Well, if you back down, then it's going to be a show of weakness. But if you have the test, it's going to be an attack. What do you do? So you intentionally sabotage your launch as a public show of impotence, but also a show that you're not backing down. So they are very, very crafty, and I wouldn't put that past them. However, even if we did manage to sabotage them by hacking it somehow, that's also going to put fear into them, because that shows that we've kind of infiltrated them. And in a way that, you know, it's kind of like how the NSA is in many ways spookier than the cops. You know, the fact that someone is listening to me on the phone and I don't know that they're there is a very different sense of fear than someone, you know, banging at your door. Because when someone's banging at your door, you can see the threat, you know what they are. Where someone listening on the phone, it's kind of like eerie. So that is something that's kind of very effective, and it feeds into the paranoia in North Korea that is pervasive in that society, even at the very top. So that would be very, very healthy and very, very useful. As for the first one, if that's the whole point about Syria and the mother of all bombs was to scare North Korea, that would be a brilliant move. If that is the consequence, as opposed to, you know, the harsh negatives that come with it.
Okay, this is all interesting stuff I hadn't thought of, but I think the idea that they might have, as a way of getting out of this impossible situation, sabotage their own launch would be hard to reconcile with the follow-up pledge to launch weekly. They're not going to sabotage a weekly launch.
Well, now they can be like, we're going to refuse to launch weekly once you start talking to us or accommodating us. So that is a threat. That hasn't actually come through yet. That's just them saying. They also threatened to blow up the world, you know. They haven't done that.
No, they haven't. But on the other hand, it seems to me like, again, the stakes are so high, you really don't want to negotiate with somebody who could potentially do this, who could do all this unbelievable damage. We want to just take our chances that it's all a ruse?
We're not taking our chances, but first of all, there's a lot of ruses that they're masters of bluffing, and they boast in their propaganda that they're bluffing frequently and that they can manipulate them. One example that they use is they compare themselves to an anthill and an elephant, meaning we know that the anthill can't kill the elephant, but it can certainly push him in the direction that they want. So this is explicitly their strategy, number one. Number two is, can you imagine the cost of launching a missile every week for a country that's that poor? It would be astronomical, and I think it would be absolutely absurd. There's no way that we're going to see a year of them launching missiles into the ocean. That's not going to happen.
All right, so how do you – let's put your prognosticator hat on. It's an unfair question, but how do you see this turning out?
There was a quote by either Hemingway or Steinbeck that said, how did you go bankrupt? And the answer was two ways, gradually and then suddenly. So that is how this is going to go down. It's going to be some sort of overnight Romania Ceausescu situation or Soviet Union, where one day you have the regime and the next day they're gone. They can't really liberalize in incremental terms because the population has been so manipulated and fed lies. For example, their big foundation myth, right? Our foundation myth is that the founding fathers sat down, wrote some magic spells on a piece of paper, created the Constitution, and now it's this invisible entity that we all have to listen to. Their foundation myth is that the great leader Kim Il-sung, after the U.S. imperialists, that's how we refer to, started the Korean War, repelled the Yank devils from the northern half of the republic. So when refugees learn that it was in fact Kim Il-sung who started the Korean War, it's been described as akin to learning that FDR bombed Japanese at Pearl Harbor. It totally blows your mind. So if they have any kind of liberalism where people have access to outside, and this has been 70 years of these lies, if they have any access to outside information, the general population, the resentment and rage and hatred they would feel, would be terrifying to behold. And the regime would have extreme amounts of trouble keeping the people under control for the simple reason that it's not even one of these cases where they can have a military junta and the military is paid off and healthy and happy at the people's expense. The military is hungry even. So the military would not have the loyalty to the regime in that situation. So it would go away. Something very radical would happen very quickly.
Well, I'm reading some text from an interview that Trump did on Fox and Friends just yesterday, and he's saying, I don't want to telegraph what I'm doing or what I'm thinking. We'll see what happens. I hope things work out well. I hope there's going to be peace. But, you know, we've been talking with this gentleman for a long time. Everybody's been outplayed. They've all been outplayed by this gentleman, and we'll see what happens. And then they asked him, well, what if North Korea tested another missile? And Trump simply said, we'll find out.
Right.
All right. So he's not – whereas I do feel like under Obama – I did know what was going to happen. I think probably they were figuring we just bide our time with this guy. I think that more or less was their policy, right?
Yeah, North Korea wasn't a priority for Obama. And in his defense, it's such a hard nut to crack that I don't blame him for being like, I don't know what to do here and I can't even begin to wrap my head around it, especially given the fact that most leftists are far more concerned with domestic policy and increasing the welfare state as opposed to kind of foreign adventurism, especially in recent years. So I mean, it's unfortunate that happened, but yeah, he was treading water for 8 years. I don't think there are any major developments vis-a-vis America and North Korea. And I think it's to Trump's great credit, frankly, that one of his first priorities was to sit down with the Chinese president and say, we're finally putting a stop to this. And somehow, or maybe it was China that kind of had the overtures, we don't know, but they're both like, all right, we're going to work together. And, you know, this is the worst place on earth and we're going to figure something out.
I have heard it speculated that it may in fact be the case that North Korea does not actually have nukes, that they say that the evidence shows that it just doesn't look like the strength is there to give us confidence that they actually have real nuclear weapons. What do you say to that?
I think that's kind of nonsensical. So when Kim Jong-il had his choice of successors, according to the North Korea Ten Commandments, they have a constitution, but that's for show purposes only. Their actual guiding document is the Ten Commandments of Kim Il-sung, the Tenth Commandment, which is, thou shalt continue the revolution through the generations until it's fulfilled, which means only a descendant of Kim Il-sung can be the leader. So Kim Jong-il had three male children, or a quasi-acknowledged to choose from. The eldest was Kim Jong-nam, who was just recently killed in that airport by a surprise attack. Kim Jong-nam was passed over for the young son, Kim Jong-un, the current leader, because he told Kim Jong-il that he wants to denuclearize, that nuclear weapons are a big threat. And from Kim Jong-il's perspective, that's crazy because it was the nuclear weapons that was keeping North Korea in power, which was true. So Kim Jong-nam said publicly in interviews with Japanese reporters that they have nukes and that this is something that was a concern of his. So I don't see why he would have any reason to lie, especially because at that point he was already in Macau in seclusion, fearing for his life and being kind of an exile from North Korea, worrying that he was going to get killed any moment, correctly.
What would you do if you were in charge? If you were the U.S. president, what would you do?
I would do what Mises said he would do.
I know you would abdicate, but I'm talking about, let's say Trump asked you, Michael Malice, what should I do?
No, in all seriousness, I mean, this sounds like an evasive issue, but evasive answer, but it's not. I am so sure that you and I, let's say me, who has studied this issue extensively, I only know a tiny percentage of what's really going on there. Because, for example, when the Japanese Prime Minister Koizumi visited North Korea in 2002, the first Japanese Prime Minister to visit since World War II, to get that meeting set up, there were all sorts of meetings behind the scenes with people from Japan, from North Korea, who wouldn't even give their names. And they had to have all these things put into place, right? So China knows so much about what's going on there. The U.S. government knows so much about what's going on there. We, you and I, and the general population know so little. So the first thing I would do is I would have to sit down and say, okay, show me what you got. And second of all, I would just explain to him, as like I did in my book, how these people think and how they operate. And I would point out the problems with each and every one of these possible scenarios. The biggest issue is, as I pointed out on Kennedy, you have 100,000, 200,000 people in these camps who are told if the U.S. imperialists invade, we're going to kill you all and burn these camps down. Now, you might say that's a sunk cost and they're going to get killed regardless, but that's something that you have to consider. So it's and the fact is they've been told, the population has been told that since the 50s, you know, the Korean War was devastating to Korea. You had Russia and China in the north, you had the U.S. and the U.N. in the south, and Korea's in the middle, and they got kind of wiped out. And their point is, you know, the U.S. imperialists are going to reinvade and kill you all as soon as we drop our guard, and they've just been biding their time. The only thing keeping them at bay is our supreme commander, Kim Jong-un. So if we start striking, they could be like, look, they're back. This is what we've been warning you about. And the entire population would be ready to take up arms and die for the sake of the leader, like they've been taught to since children. And it wouldn't even be that crazy because we actually would be attacking.
So on the one hand, I think you feel like this regime is such a moral abomination that if you could do something to accelerate its demise, then that thing ought to be done.
Ought to is a big word. I would like to see it. I would like, if I had one wish, it would be that this regime vanish from the face of the earth. Literally one wish, that would be it.
Now, in this case, I'm not saying I necessarily advocate this, but this would be different from, let's say, somehow you were able to dislodge this regime. I wouldn't be as concerned about the after effect because it would basically be a CIA-approved stooge who would take over. And if I lived in North Korea, I would take the CIA stooge by a million miles
100%.
Over the current regime. You know, so I'll take that.
100%.
Whereas in Syria,
right,
it would be, I know it's going to be somebody terrible and somebody who can't possibly be controlled, and it would be a nightmare for everybody involved. I know that for a fact.
Right.
I don't feel like that would really be the case here, right?
They just want food, homes, roads and schools. They are the victims of the ideology. They're not proponents of the ideology. And I mean, look at South Korea. South Korea has the highest per capita income level of any place in Asia as of recently. South Korea and us sometimes have rivalries and they might dislike some things America does, but they are hardcore allies. And North Korea would very quickly, even China. I mean, wouldn't you rather have like a mini China than another Syria? I mean, it's a very easy answer. And again, you have people who are fleeing North Korea into China, women who are being sold into sex slavery, and just all sorts of nightmarish stuff. So yeah, it would not be analogous to Syria whatsoever. You're not going to have North Koreans. The only North Koreans that engaged in terrorism did so under the auspices of the regime. They did this repeatedly, and this is why North Korea was on the state-sponsored terrorism list. But now they're just hungry. I just want education. You know what I mean? This is a Maslow's hierarchy of needs issue. It's not some sort of, you know, we want to rule the world issue.
Would you say that the regime is probably, one way or another, got to collapse of its own weight at some point?
The regime already collapsed in the 90s. In the 90s, the food distribution center stopped working. However, since the government provides everything in North Korea, if you said, where's the food, you got in legal trouble because that's criticizing the government. Kim Jong-il, and I talk about this in my book, intentionally let up to over a million people starve to death because he said if we give them food not through the government, through the UN, they won't need the government anymore. So when the government is not capable of providing food, education, and infrastructure, the railway system broke down too because there was no gasoline, that is regime collapse. And they're still there. So when regimes collapse, it's not like they literally vanish from the face of the earth and, like, you know, turn to dust. But there was a complete breakdown of lawlessness and the sick part is those who believed in the government and were most loyal to the regime were the ones to starve first because they're like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's the cynical ones who start to steal and to go to China and break the law and to do all sorts of, you know, air quotes, illegal things to do what they need to survive that manage to live. So that's even more how twisted this country is, that they've rewarded loyalty by death via starvation.
Well, back here in the United States, we have a president who campaigned on a slogan of America First. And what we're seeing so far is he's now, if anything, more supportive of what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen. We got the strike in Syria. We got NATO troops making their way into the Baltic states, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania. You've got calls by the U.S. commanding general in Afghanistan for more troops there. We got U.S. troops returning to Somalia, and we got saber rattling over North Korea.
Right.
This is a bit much.
Well, how great would it be if part of the deal with China is we liberate North Korea and then we get all of our troops out of Korea? Great. Love it. Wouldn't you love that?
I would love that. I would be okay. I would say that's a reasonable deal.
Yeah.
But yet the problem is it seems to me anytime you speculate that behind the scenes there's some master plan going on, there never is. We're always overestimating the intelligence and abilities of our people in charge. It just seems to be always the case.
Sure.
Like for example, even if there would be some strategy like in the Ron Paul campaign that I just could not understand, I was always told, no, it's part of some big master plan. But couldn't it just be a bad decision by somebody? You know, it was never that. It was always a big master plan. So with Trump, a lot of his diehard supporters are saying, now listen, Woods, don't you worry here. He knows what he's doing. He's got a master plan. But yet what it looks like to me kind of is something a little bit more prosaic at work, that he's surrounded by people who are influencing him in a bad direction, and he's moving in that direction.
I hear you, but my reason why I don't know that I'd agree is because I am fairly certain, and I think this is kind of indisputably true, that China has been thinking about the situation long and hard because it's right on their border, and that they probably came to Trump with a plan, and he probably edited a little or just greenlit it. So I don't think this is Trump's plan. I think this was China's plan.
Interesting. And do you think China is seeking some kind of a rapprochement with Trump, who spent half the campaign denouncing them?
Yeah, I mean, they've already gotten it. Right away, he's turning his back and calling them currency manipulators. He treated them. I mean, you saw how he spoke about them during the campaign. He treated the Chinese president very warmly at Mar-a-Lago. So they, by all accounts, you know, got along famously. It wasn't tough. Don't you think that in all the footage and all the media reports, he came off much harder against Angela Merkel than against the Chinese president?
Yeah, no question about it.
And during the campaign, he spoke against China. There's even a little montage of him saying China. It was China, 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 China. He didn't like Germany's trade policy, migrant policy, with good reason. But I don't think he took any swipes at Germany particularly or Angela Merkel. But you saw, I mean, they did shake hands earlier. That's kind of a mistaken thing. They shook hands at the press conference. But the body language and the tone and the look on her face, as opposed to the Chinese president, it was night and day.
Yeah, that's an interesting insight. Well,
about it. If he pulls off something with North Korea and ends this regime, This man deserves a Peace Prize every year for the rest of his life.
Are you not concerned that if he does that, then that becomes the justification for every intervention from now until the end of time?
I have no concerns bigger than freeing the people of North Korea. And there's always going to be, look, Tom, you really think they're going to need to find some rationalization? There will always be a rationalization. Come on.
I don't know. I worry about this. They'll say, look, everything is just as easy as this. This was easy.
They will always say that anyway. They'll say that anyway, Tom. There's no way this is going to be easy, by the way. There's no way.
Well, I guess we just have to wait and see, right? This is not like my episodes on history where you say, okay, this happened and wasn't that interesting. Thanks for coming.
And while you're waiting, you can read Dear Reader.
Yes, that is now that's the way to wrap things up.
Yeah, and catch up and be where everyone else is and understand what's going on there.
So first of all, if you're an audiobook type, go to TomWoodsAudio.com and type in Dear Reader. Get that baby for free for yourself. If you are the old-fashioned type and you like to read it, have that thing in your hands physically, what is the best way to get the book?
Just on Amazon. It's on Kindle, and you could get the paperback as well. So
okay. I didn't know if you wanted us to go to your site or not.
No. Just we could go to the links in the show notes page.
Yeah. Okay. TomWoods.com/892 will have a link to Michael's book, both the audio version and the print. And is there a Kindle version?
Yes, there is.
And the Kindle version. That'll all be there. And then also make sure and watch this clip from Michael on Kennedy. It's not just on Syria. It's on several topics. But this is why he's the best. He's the guy on TV that you want to watch. You can't if you're on your way out the door to go somewhere, you have to say, wait a minute, hold on. I'll be out in a minute when Michael's on.
And they cut my Casey Anthony joke.
So. Yeah, but I saw that on Twitter, right? Did you tweet that joke out?
Yeah, I did tweet that joke, yeah.
Was it because they just thought it was in poor taste?
They never tell me why they cut anything. I just get home and all of a sudden there's like a sudden pause in what I'm saying. I'm like, oh, darn it.
Oh, that's terrible. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Would it be, do you think it's suitable for the Tom Woods show or would we have to put a mature marking on it or what?
Well, let's ask the host. What does the host think?
Host thinks it's a funny joke. So if you're offended by it, then go jump in a lake.
Well, there was the head of Mother Jones magazine, which is a far left magazine, said that we shouldn't name Tomahawk missiles after Native Americans because it's offensive. And I said, well, we should name them Casey Anthony missiles because they are used to kill children.
Yeah, that's that's a Michael Malice joke right there. Did you make that joke up?
Of course.
That is great. That is great.
Yeah, I'm glad you endorse Casey Anthony humor, Tom.
Well,
how many kids do you have? Five.
Off the air. But the joke is implicitly against the killing of children, is it not? So
correct. Correct. Right. And she would sound innocent.
Oh, yeah. There is that. Yeah. All right. Well, look, not wanting to invite any more of a lawsuit than I already have, I'm going to say it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Michael Malice. TomWoods.com/892 is the Michael Malice smorgasbord where you can get the Dear Reader book in all sorts of varieties and for your intellectual pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, before I let you go, I need you as a favor to listen to what I'm about to tell you. I have a great, great guy who does the audio for this show, and he has helped me through many a crisis. He's helped me to mitigate recording issues. He's helped me to increase the overall sound quality. He's had very fast turnaround times. He's dealt with my crazy schedule like a champ. I cannot recommend him highly enough. So if you're somebody who needs podcast production, distribution, and marketing, or music recording, mixing, and mastering, session musicians, virtual instrument programming, Foley sound effects, sound design, dialogue editing, or voice actors for voiceovers and dialogue replacement, Chris can take care of all of that. By the way, recently there was an episode of Contra Krugman. It was episode 82. And we had some technical glitches, and because I was so frazzled from all that, I forgot to say Contra Krugman, episode 82. And then I was out for dinner. There was no way for me to record it. So Chris, in his usual creative way, pulled out from me saying episode 72. He got the 2. And then from episode 81, he got the 80. And he put them together, and you can't tell the difference. It sounds like I said Contra Krugman, episode 82. But I never said that. Chris made me say that. He is a miracle worker, and he is an indispensable ingredient in the success and quality of the Tom Woods Show. So do please check him out if you need any audio needs of this kind. ChrisWilliamsAudio.com. He's giving you a 10% discount off your first contract if you use code WOODS at checkout. One other thing, May 20th in Seattle, Bob Murphy and I are recording another live episode of our weekly podcast, Contra Krugman. We did this in Seattle a year ago. It was a huge hit, and I hope you'll join us for another live recording of Contra Krugman. It's part of the Mises Institute event in Seattle, which will feature Walter Block and Jeff Deist and Doug Casey via Skype, and the recording of Contra Krugman. It's going to be fantastic and fun. So definitely make sure and check that out. The information is at tomwoods.com/events. I have other events coming up. I just haven't updated the events page to reflect that, but this one is up there for May 20th, 2017, tomwoods.com/events. I hope to see you in Seattle. If you're enjoying the show, please consider becoming part of the elite as a supporting listener at supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.